And we turn our attention to emerging economies. Always a pleasure to chat to Dr. Martin Davies. We're going to be hearing about, as you know, I mean, I don't think I hide it very well, my favorite economic region. Dr. Martin Davies, welcome back. How are you doing this morning? Oopsie.
Hey, how's the weekend?
Fabulous. Weekends are always too short. I mean, they're terrible. Okay, so I'm excited because we don't often actually talk Turkey, and I'm actually quite excited. The lira has had a difficult couple of weeks, yeah, and now the lira has crashed. Why is that?
It's this is an example of why emerging markets need to withstand populist leaders and have an independent central bank. Turkey has none of those. So the Turkish lira has lost, you thought the rand was doing badly, has lost 45% of its value against the US dollar this year. And in the last month or so, through November, 30% of its entire value has been wiped out against the US dollar. Now, why is this? It's, well, monetary policy that is highly politicized, highly, populist, and not grounded in real-world economics. Many of the opposition in Turkey are calling Erdogan, who's the long sort of standing prime minister of Turkey, of likening his monetary policy to the flat earth society.
Right. No,
while
he isn't.
Other economies have been sort of slightly hiking interest rates, he's been doing the exact opposite. The markets have punished him as a result. And of deep concern, people think, well, what does this really mean? Well, so many companies in Turkey, a high obviously trading economy just like ours, and raw material inputs, become significantly more expensive because of the cheap local currency. So one of the industries that is really up in arms is the pharmaceutical sector. All the pharmaceutical companies in Turkey have said, well, now there's a significant shortage because we cannot buy raw material inputs, critical inputs, into the pharmaceutical industry and medicines, etc.
This is
something which is massively damaging for the Turkish economy.
Absolutely. Inflation is now above 21% in Turkey, which is an incredible number. I mean, for those who maybe don't follow the economies as much as we do, I won't say that we're one for one, South Africa to Turkey, but our numbers are not too disparate, if that makes sense, Martin. So
yeah,
21% is huge. And if South Africans have to say 21% inflation, that's hectic.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have, of course, very, very, sanguine inflation targeting. Some people call it conservative.
Correct.
I just call it right. And Turkey situations, we have significantly high inflation, 20%+, as you correctly say. At the same time, reducing interest rates. And we all know inflation ultimately hits the poorest people in society because they spend a significant portion of their income on basic foodstuffs, on transportation, sectors that are particularly prone to inflation, food, fuel prices, transportation, etc. And they hit significantly harder. So this is what's happening in Turkey as well now. I think what the future of Turkey is ultimately dollarization because the markets and ultimately people lose faith in the value of their own currency. Think Zimbabwe, think many countries in Africa, think
Venezuela.
Many countries in Latin America.
Mm.
Exactly the same.
All right. And then turning our attention to China, this is something I find difficult to believe, actually, especially now that the one-child policy has been lifted, but their population has peaked.
2021, if you will, is going to be a sort of an inflection point, a turning point for China, because reports are coming out now and many demographic calculations have found that China's population has peaked. There will never be more Chinese in the world than there are this year. That's the argument.
Wow.
And saying, well, since 1980, China, if you recall, had a one-child policy. So this was largely enforced. Of course, there were exceptions, but largely enforced across the population. And in theory, well, up until recent years, it's only been liberalized the last sort of 3, 4, 5 years or so. So it's a battle to find anybody in China below the age of 40 who actually has a sibling.
Wow. That's
and what is happening is China is now coming off a demographic cliff. So you're finding now the number of deaths in China this year are over 10 million forecast, where the number of births in China this year were roughly 8.5 million calculations. So even in the last 2 years or so, maybe it's COVID also a factor here as well. In 2019, births were just over 14.5 million. So we're seeing significant declines, despite the government loosening the policy, creating incentives to have more kids. But China's become a much more wealthier society, much more educated, much more urbanized, and raising kids is very expensive. So we're seeing, you'll see this going forward, is will China become rich before it becomes old? And I think the latter is applying here now. And you'll also see a situation where labor markets, less labor, which will be more inflationary. You've got a bit of a property bubble. Sounds like Japan circa late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, no.
So this is a major driver of Chinese growth going in the past. It has been China's young demographic. This has now reached that turning point. It's a very different nature of Chinese growth going forward.
Sorry, you made such your statements were quite profound. Like some of your sentences, will it get rich before it gets old? That's really quite a telling moment, hey?
It will be, because also you've had a situation where you have two sets of grandparents, one set of parents, and one child. So you had six people effectively
this pyramid.
Focusing and investing in one kid. now effectively, you're going to – it changed dramatically. So all savings, you've got how does one kid support, a large number of elderly people, again, with a pension system that is relatively rudimentary. And how does a state come in to support a very rapidly aging population, particularly considering two factors? Firstly, the weight of, or if that's the correct word, the weight of this mass demographic that China has, 1.2 odd billion people. And secondly, the relatively low per capita income for a, certainly not a first world state. Not at all. It's sort of upper developing perhaps.
Yes. Sure.
And this will be China's biggest challenge going forward. How to maintain growth in an aging society where older people, as you know, say they don't spend very much.
Okay.
Very different dynamic.
Very. I so appreciate these perspectives. Okay, so then our final story today, Didi, which we have gotten to know as, a competitor e-hailing business here in South Africa, is about to delist from the New York Stock Exchange.
I've seen Didi adverts coming up, so they seem to be doing okay here in South Africa, recently entered. But Didi, obviously a Chinese company. And this is, a profound change because Didi listed on the New York Stock Exchange, I think it was end of June, if you were. I think the IPO, following the initial public offering in the U.S., raising capital, that the stock settled at around sort of $65-70 billion U.S. dollars, one of the largest listings on the New York Stock Exchange in the last decade or so, or even ever. Now, 6 months later, or less than six months later, the company Didi is delisting from the New York Stock Exchange in the wake of sweeping Chinese regulatory crackdown in the last few months that has certainly impacted and kept the wings of major Chinese internet firms, including the likes of Alibaba. We've spoken about that, Tencent. We know all about that in South Africa. And effectively, it's showing the Chinese regulator is in charge. So all Chinese, and this, of course, was sort of, I think, initiated by Donald Trump, talking about preventing Chinese companies from listing on the New York Stock Exchange, getting capital effectively, and maybe competing in his mind in unfair fashion. Chinese regulators now from the other side are saying, well, you need to be more patriotic as Chinese companies. You must list in Hong Kong. So that's what Didi is effectively doing. The share price has dropped by almost half. So think $30 odd billion wiped out. And this is now, Didi, claims to have more than 15 million drivers and nearly 500, half a billion million users. And it's something, this is a dramatic shift. We will not see Chinese companies listed on the NYSE anytime soon in the future.
Wow.
And we're seeing this division of capital markets, literally west and east.
But, I mean, no. I mean, Martin, you and I both know that we can, Hong Kong is easy for me to invest in. It's not like it's the struggle to get sort of A shares on the Chinese stock exchange. So it seems that like quite a punishment for 30%, what did you say, 30% or 50% of its value to go for the same company that is going to just reappear on another stock exchange.
I think ultimately it's spooked investors by saying, well, how do we trust the valuation of this company when what they would argue, regulations coming out of Beijing are somewhat arbitrary and difficult to predict.
Uh-huh.
And of course, the Chinese regulator, ultimately the Chinese Communist Party, has decided to clamp down for an array of reasons, I think, on Chinese tech companies and really show who's in charge. And this is a very strong state, and one that doesn't entirely trust capital or freewheeling capitalism as many would like it to.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Martin Davies. Always appreciate your perspectives. Emerging economies, looking at Southeast Asia, and of course, a bit of Asia Central as Turkey is involved.